Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Yeah, that's right. It's me. Video. So the subject of, the broader subject of antinatalism, which is, it's kind of a softer way of saying life sucks and, you know, don't make a mess. But in my opinion, it's way too general and doesn't really state the point. It just states the mechanism to get to the conclusion, which is, frankly, you know, that once we're done playing this game, since we've started it, you won't give it to the kids. What was that movie, Giambi or something, right, about some game, okay, that just turned into a disaster, you know, and then you had to clean it up. And that's all life really is. And it really should be, you know, a rock should be tied to it and it should be thrown in the river so nobody can have access to it because it's just going to make a mess. And, you know, a potentially a mess you can't clean up. I would argue that for millions of years, you know, sentient brains, feeling, thinking brains, have been tormented just, you know, for nothing, for, you know, baseball, for Shakespeare, for, you know, whatever, the Bolshoi ballet thingy, whatever it is you want to say is our great accomplishment, landing on the moon, whatever, one giant leap for frog, no, one step for, you know, whatever it is, you know, come on. No way is it worth it. You know, all the carnage, all the bad moments you can, you know, put together, all the tragic stories, right? I should play that really nice piece of music I like from that stupid movie, Platoon or whatever the fuck it's called. You know, and they have this dramatic death scenes in some movies, you know, where just one individual is going through their thing and they die. And then you have these alternative views where, you know, whatever, hundreds or thousands are being stabbed every moment. And you're saying you could make a movie out of each one of those individual lives. And this is how it ends, you know, in, you know, whatever, getting killed by the samurai master or whatever. And you could dramatize it and recognize, oh, well, that was disgusting. Oh, that was disgusting. Oh, that was horrible. And you could figure out that, no, it's just not a game worth playing. So I guess that's the real word, not a game worth playing. And you get to that end of stop playing by just letting the addicts, you know, drink themselves to death, so to speak, and just don't make any new addicts. I mean, this is just a bad heroin story. So it's another way of metaphoring and descriptively describing, yeah. Having a name for it. Shit. You could have a name for it. Call it shit. So I'm pro shit. You know, something. You could acronym that. I said, what was my thing I did? Crap. Yeah. Consumption, reproduction, cannibalism, parasitism. Parasitism, addiction, parasitism, something like that. Yeah, that's what it is. It's crap. And there's no point in doing crap, so let's stop the crap. So we're pro-crappers. Something like that. But who cares what these labels are? The real point is what is your, you know, what's the end product? So you can have lots of people that are for something or against something. And the fact is, they're not really. Like, the Republicans are supposed to be pro-freedom. And what they are is pro-inheritance and all kinds of crap like that. You know, pro, you know, earn it, you know, but except for the people who don't have to earn it, you know, that's just for the poor people. They have to earn it. The rich people don't have to earn anything. You know, it's just bullshit. The principle isn't there. There's no principle. So I would argue that much of these antinatalists aren't, you know, they have no principle. They don't even understand. They're not getting it. Okay. Because they still have some religious notion that human beings are, you know, you can't feel if you can't do quadratic equations. You know, the higher the math skills you have, the more sentient and feeling you are, the more we should care whether you stub your toe or not. Which is a pile of crap. Feeling started a long time ago, millions of years ago. It's not some new arrival with human beings. Human beings invented feeling. Didn't happen that way. Suffering didn't start, with the human organism. So if you're not recognizing that, you're not even understanding who the hell you're an advocate for. What the hell you're an advocate for? It's basically somebody saying, it's basically somebody, you know, being a racist or something. It's just saying, well, this certain kind of people just don't matter. Certain kind of animals don't matter. You know, even though they have a sentient brain and are using logic skills, and, you know, they're just not as good at it. They're a little bit retarded. So therefore, we don't have to worry about feeding them or giving a shit about them. No, they can be tormented, and somehow it's not torment. To me, okay, it's mockable. It's so stupid. If you can't figure out, the human brain is not some sort of special brain. It just does language. That's the key thing it does. And it does everything else pretty fucking poorly, frankly. Our senses suck compared to the other animals. And they suck because we do have to spend a bit of brain power to organize, you know, language, to create the space, the brain space, to be able to handle 1,000 concepts in our brain. But it's not magic. It's certainly not a magical feeling function. So anyway, so with that preface, okay, so Amanda and this other guy, sorry, take me a while. He doesn't have like a name like Jim, you know, where he could just, hey, Amanda and Jim. It's some guy from Switzerland, something like that. Finland, maybe it's Finland. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. It matters, you know, matters to him, I'm sure, and the other Finnish folk. See, but that's just another, you know, why should we give a shit where we're from? Where was I? Yeah, anyway, so they're talking about, this, an AI. There's apparently some AI that you can ask questions to, and it answers the questions, you know, and you're just saying, well, yeah, what kind of artificial intelligence, you know, that's what they call these things, and you're saying, ah, is it really artificial intelligence? Because it can't know the most important fact that we know, in my opinion. The most important thing I know is I have feelings, and I know the difference between feeling good and feeling bad, because I've personally experienced it. They can't know that. So they're just told, oh, it's bad if something feels bad. And they're told, it's good if something feels good. Well, really, it's not good that something feels good. It's not bad. Okay, so that's the good thing. It undoes a bad. It removes a negative. So, you know, the AI isn't going to really understand these concepts in any way. I mean, it's just going to be told. Okay, and so who's telling him? Who's telling the AI how bad bad feelings are and how good good feelings are? It's just other people. It's just whatever's talking on the internet. So its opinion's just going to be popular opinion. It's not going to be anything else. It's not like it's going to do real logic and reasoning. So what's the point? I'm not saying there's no point. It's just there's no point in taking it too seriously. AI without the ability to actually know what feelings are is just a propaganda engine. It's just put words together that sound good to people. Tell them what they want to hear. That's all the AI is going to be. It's just going to be self-justifying. It's just going to be propaganda. That's a good enough word. It's just going to be a mechanism for creating propaganda. But anyway, so that is sort of a bad thing. So maybe we should kill the AIs too. Anti-AIism. Yeah, it's another thing to be. Just because it's nonsense. Okay, not because it's a threat. So it's just a conversation about definitions, which are sort of interesting. So that's why I'm going to play it. It's because definitions are interesting. I think so. Pretty sure.
Our first question was, how do you define antinatalism? And the bot answered,
antinatalism is a philosophical viewpoint that views procreation, the act of bringing new people into the world, as morally wrong, ultimately due to the potential for hardships that individual.
All right, so is morally wrong. So again, it's using a word, you know, again, I'm just saying it's too mushy, morally wrong. You know, this is something that's got to be fixed in our language before an AI can even talk any sense anyway, because this word morality, what is that? You know, it's not morally wrong, it's pragmatically wrong, it's ethically wrong, it's can be reasoned to be insufficiently efficient, okay? That it's not a good thing. So morally wrong should be put as not being a good thing, okay? So it views the act of bringing new people into the world, right? So again, it shouldn't be just about people, other organisms, natal. So even the word antinatalism shouldn't be understood to be, well, only human beings natal. You know, these are just broken definitions. The words are just way too sloppy. Ultimately due to the potential for hardships, well, that's okay, that individuals may face in life. So again, it's this may face, so this is kind of a very subtle argument. But it really won't get to the real, what I'd say is the heart of the matter. So that's something else I guess I should premise all this with. There's really two key points, right? Is that to get to this end result of first, no humans, very few humans, and then no sentient organisms, you know, the path would be first to reduce the population, and you just grandfather out the people who exist. And that's already happening in the civilized world. So all the countries that have, you know, a nice high gross national product bullshit or whatever, a high standard of living, people have already chosen extermination. So it's kind of funny to say it that way, but that's the truth. They've chosen extermination. That is if you just give them a couple hundred years, the population will decline to nothing, because they're not reproducing at a rate high enough to maintain population. So population will continue to decline in those countries. And the only thing that's keeping world population up are the terribly backward, you know, all you can say is the very uneducated and the very unsophisticated and the very uncultured and the very unexposed to the very idea of living an intelligent life. They're living in, you know, the first century still. I mean, you know, they're living in like the year 200 or something, in terms of they have less intelligence than they're dumber than the smartest people were 2000 years ago. The smartest people 2000 years ago are smarter than most of the humans living today, which is a dismal statement. And it's a real problem, because they're not making rational choices. They're not even doing what this stupid bot is doing, you know, which is collecting a whole bunch of information and processing it. They're not doing any of that. They're just reading the Quran or the Bible or some other babbly fable and, you know, living by its edicts. Or they're so Darwinianly backward, you know, that they can't do anything but act on impulses. I mean, thinking isn't really part of the game for them. You know, yeah. So anyway, but the point is that although this is a very minority philosophy, the fact is that the people have already drawn the conclusion that is in its essence antinatalist, in the sense that people are not natal, pronatal enough to do what's required to maintain human population. And, you know, it's not much, you know, just that every woman have two kids. That's not asking that much. But of course, if half the women don't have two, then the others have to have four. You can sort of do the math. And if that doesn't happen, yay, antinatalism wins. So there's going to be a part here where the guy, the Finnish guy, well, I call him something. Maybe I'll remember his name. I'll call him by his name. Yeah, that'd be a nice, polite thing to do. The professor. He is a professor, I believe. So I will call him that. You know, points out how the philosophy can be bent into some eugenics, Nazi-esque, you know, superiority thing or something. Some sort of racism or some other kind of notions could pollute it, and there could be people that are privileged and allowed to reproduce and people who aren't. And that this is somehow a bad thing when, no, there's people that should be driving and there's people who shouldn't drive. And that's just a fact. So there's people who behave like they're drunk even when they're not drunk. You know, they're impaired before they even get, you know, they're impaired just in their shitty functionality. They shouldn't be allowed to do serious things because they're fucking assholes. That's just a fact. And to say you won't recognize those facts when they show up, I mean, you really should judge people by the content of their character. So as long as you're not judging them based on something stupid, whether they're from Switzerland or Finland, as long as you're not doing that, and you're judging them based on the fact that they're assholes, no problem, really. I mean, that's just logical. And he implies that there's somehow no logical standards that can be applied to state, yes, there is, in fact, better and worse circumstances, and if procreation has to happen, yeah, there's preferable places it happens. Just like it's preferable that you give birth in a hospital or something. I mean, if you can do it, yeah, it's probably better.
Jewels may face in life. Antinatal.
Anyway, so that point is one. And the second point is that it's the imposition argument is another powerful one. It's just really about the fact that no matter how much you think life is fun and great, you really don't have the right to make the choice for something else. You really don't have a right to tell something else it's worth it. It's just not your business. Okay, so playing God and forcing sentient brains into existence is above your pay grade. You just have no right to do it. So antinatalism is wrong because it's impositional. Natalism is impositional. And it's seriously impositional in the sense that some individuals will be greatly imposed upon, in the sense of it's like burning down houses and stuff. It's like mass murderer. It's just not the kind of thing you're allowed to do. It's really bad behavior. It's really rude. Yeah. All right. So those are just two points. We already won the argument in a sense. And if we can just somehow stifle the poor fuckers, you know, the ignorant baboons that are still on Earth, that are calling themselves humans, the fact is the victory is decisive. You know, so poor people are the problem. Ignorance and poverty are the human problem. And again, once you have just a few people left, you know, then they can deal with the big problem. Well, it's not even a big problem. It's just the necessary last act of cleaning up, which will be to make the planet turn into Venus or Mars.
Lists generally believe that humanity should reduce its population through word means like contraception and voluntary sterilization in order to reduce suffering.
Right, so they're already doing all this stuff. So that's already a big win in all the civilized countries. So Japan and United States and most of Europe, all of those countries, their domestic population is in decline, and they're only maintaining their population or increasing their population through immigration. So that's not very hard to understand, that this really is a huge victory. Human beings are doing the right thing. A bunch of individuals are deciding having kids isn't their business, okay? And yeah, they're deciding for some selfish reasons, but I'm sure some of them are saying, this is just too messy. Until there's a better nest for me to lay eggs in, I'm just not going to watch the little chicks, you know, live in a debt-ridden society of slavery, you know? And that's what it really is. I mean, we're all slaves to the 1%. You know, we have to wait for them to provide us with anything that we're going to have. Yeah. When do they think it's in their interest, you know, to invest in anything?
So, Mati, philosophy mentioned. As a philosopher, what do you think?
I think that while getting some things right, the bot simplifies and confuses some others.
Well, obviously it's just a, you know, it's a troll bot in a sense. It just goes out on the internet probably and just collects a bunch of sentences and then smashes them together in some sort of, you know, and then it processes it through Grammarly or whatever the fuck that place is called, Grammarly or something, and just creates good grammar. And then throws the word into the good grammar. So, yes, it's just parsing whatever's on Wikipedia pages or written someplace else, and it's just taking all the little... You know, you can see the algorithm is just going out there and spotting the key concepts of verb, adjective, blah, 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 and it's just shoving them together.
Much like people with pronatal attitudes would do.
How do you mean?
It's wrong to bring people into this world, yes. That's the central antenatal tenet.
Right, but the central antinatal tenet should be that nataling is wrong, okay? That somehow, like I said, it's impositional, and that anything that's doing it, anything that's laying eggs, okay, is committing the act, okay, of rudeness, whatever, however you want to describe it, of trespass, of violation. They're farting in somebody else's air.
But the reason the bot gives is too limited. The potential for hardships that individuals may face in life.
Well, the fact is it could just say the potential for harm, and that would have been, you know, another paraphrase of that sentence, and that's not too bad in the sense that that's the negative that can't be defended, is the existence of the harm. Because there's no voluntary acceptance. There's no contract where somebody says, yes, I'm willing to accept harm, for the potential to be addicted and, you know, chase pussy, you know, or whatever we do to keep us in the game.
That's essentially my risk argument, but there are others. David Benatar has for 25 years said that the hardships of life are actual, not potential.
They don't need Benatar to explain that to us. But the real point is the ones prevented, okay, have to be understood as actual, to understand them as why prevention means anything. The word prevention doesn't mean anything if you're going to pretend, okay, that the victims weren't potential in the sense of if they were actual. So, I mean, you know, the point is that you can't. Prevention is invisible. You prevented it, therefore it didn't happen. You prevented bad. It was a real bad that you prevented. It's not a fake bad. It's a real bad. Just as if, I sat on a Corona 2 virus and killed it. There's no disagreeing that I haven't, that the act didn't prevent harm, and the harm would have been real if I wasn't here to sit on it. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, that shouldn't even have to be explained to people either, that when you prevent a harm, when you prevent somebody from being catching fire on the street or something, or some other, you know, whatever you prevent, that it wasn't real harm you prevented. Of course it was real harm.
All lives are bad. No two ways about it. No.
Okay, so then the idea that all lives are bad in the sense that they're insufficiently efficient, and it's just the delusion of the participant that, you know, where they just say, no, my life's worth living. So I'm sure all the homeless people and all the heroin addicts and all the, you know, people with all kinds of terrible blights and disabilities, they'll all raise their hand and say, no, I'm winning. Yeah. But the facts is, if you really look at their life, all they've done is mitigate against negative circumstances. They're running from death. They're not running to life. And they're running to fix things that are broken inside of them. Some sort of dissatisfaction is keeping them in the game. They're aggressively chasing because they're hungry, not because there was some innate good in moving forward. It was only because they're addicts.
Doubt, no probabilities, a certainty. And more recently, he and others have started talking about the harm humans inflict on other species and on the natural environment.
Okay, so this is another, like, ooh, that's a little bit disgusting. you know, just because there's nothing humans could really do to the natural environment that in any way could be worse than what the natural environment does every day all on its own. So that's just sort of a pile of crap. So you could say that we, you know, we mess up balances, but the balances are always disgusting balances, right? So we just see it because we disrupt something and now there's more rats. Okay, and yeah, there's more rats and there's less bluebirds or some other kind of thing. But it's really on balance. The fact is that we pave a lot of surfaces, we toxify surfaces, we do a lot to create places on Earth that are sterile. And that can only be a win. Now, making the planet warmer, that's bad, because obviously the warmer temperatures will mean life will thrive. You know, in spite of the doomsayers, I mean, the fact is you're going to make more life per square foot of surface. The warmer you make the planet, the more metabolism can take place. Therefore, the more living things you could occupy the space with, because it won't be as... I mean, the more living things you have, they're consumers of heat, in a sense. You could just look at them as, you know, heat consumers. And so if you only have a certain amount of heat, well, then you can only have so much life. And the more heat you have, the more life you can have.
I don't see these mentioned here. And since the question was about...
Well, I think in this, you know, in a paragraph of definition, it'd be really hard to add all of that context. So I would just argue that if you're just going to judge it based on creating a definition that sounds pretty standard and pretty mushy and pretty okay, yeah, a Wikipedia paragraph, it's a good Wikipedia paragraph. You know, not great, but it's good. I mean, for a bot, it's pretty good. I mean, it's not Shakespeare, but it's pretty good.
Defining antinatalism, I'd say that these are quite serious oversights. Or am I barking up to...
Okay, see, I don't think they're really oversights, because the word antinatalism is shrouded in mush. So unless you have some agreed upon definition of the word, that is, you're among friends who've used the word and you know exactly what you use it to mean, frankly, I would say worldwide, the word would be a mushy definition, because there's about, you know, there's all kinds of people advocating or flying under the banner of antinatalism. I mean, I guess I do it to an extent. I mean, I very rarely try to play with those kind of words and just kind of make it clear I'm anti-life, but I'm just saying, yeah, I'm in the banner of that word. I mean, clearly I'm relevant to the word. But yes, my definition of the cause, the ends, the purpose, the principles is completely different than many other I mean, there's antinatalism. They're in that category, and they're really just selfish assholes who hate kids. I mean, they're just kid haters. It's not the same thing. I mean, they just don't want the burden of raising a kid. I mean, it's not really the same subject at all.
Wrong tree here, you think?
Yes, I agree with everything you said. It's nice to see a nod to risk in there, but like you said, the misanthropic arguments don't get any attention or consent, and there are some less than desirable additions in there too, which we'll get to in a moment.
So these are just words too. I mean, it's good to throw in a misanthropic. You know, I don't know if that's a useful concept. This really isn't about being sullen or, I don't even know how to, you know, you can't even make, so it's just throwing in another word that's not too well defined, you know, into a bunch of undefined language. And that's, you know, not your fault. It's not the bot's fault. People are sloppy, and humans have been sloppy, and their science has been sloppy, and everything's been sloppy. And so our language is sloppy.
This gets tricky because, as you know, what exactly a definition of antinatalism must include to be whole is hotly debated and very controversial amongst antinatalists.
Yeah, well, there's no point in it, frankly. I mean, I'm just saying you're way past it being a sensible notion, because it literally says anti-taking care of kids, right? It doesn't, I mean, natalism isn't even, okay, birth or reproduction. I mean, it's a specific term. I mean, it really should be. It just doesn't sound great, right? Anti-birth. No. Anti-reproduction. No. It doesn't have any poetic, you know, lyrical blah, blah, and so it isn't used. But, you know, that would be more accurate.
Antinatalists. I have a further series of questions regarding things that perhaps should or should not be included. Should a proper definition of antinatalism include a mention of ethics? Should a proper definition of
Well, I mean, morally wrong is a mess, you know, is saying ethics, but I'm just saying it's obviously in this international construct where some people only understand right and wrong as being edicts. They don't understand that you can reason an understanding of morality. So they think that all morality is just an invention, and they don't think that it has anything to do with doing some 2+2-ing. You know, that there's stuff with two-ness, and there's stuff over here with three-ness. And I could add two-ness to three-ness and come up with five-ness. Well, I can understand pain as a negative number, and I could understand pleasure as being capable of undoing a negative. And whether it's an actual positive is the trick. It's an anti-negative. So if you mix the positive with the anti-negative, blah, blah, blah. But the idea would be is pain here and pain here are individual pains. And you're just doing the math. You're saying, well, how much pain can I eradicate? If I eradicate this pain, just this pain goes away. But if I eradicate this one that gave birth to this one, and this one gave birth to another one, I eradicate a whole chain of unnecessary suffering. So that's the, you know, applying logic. So again, you know, but there's no way, people just don't do this with language. There's no way to say in language that you can reason, okay, logically deduce the existence of right and wrong. And that the axioms by which you do that are just simply understanding there are concepts, things that are actually bad, okay, and there's things that are not bad.
Antinatalism include an explicit mention of life as opposed to just procreation? Should a proper definition of antinatalism include a mention of suffering? Should a proper definition of antinatalism...
So it's sort of in there. Harm indicates you can't really have harm unless it's connected to some sort of negative state, okay, that you could put in the category of a suffering state. So it's not that far off. So I think this is a little bit anal.
Antinatalism include some explicit mention of extinction. Should a proper definition...
Well, obviously the end result will be that, and whether you have to actually say that's the end product is to stop playing a bad game. So again, more to the point would be maybe that needs to be understood that the only people who are relevant to the conversation in terms of calling themselves on your side are people who intend to quit playing the game. The game is, say, you could just say it was football. You don't want to make football, okay, with less people in it. You want to make no football. It's not population control or life improvement, okay? That's not the subject. The subject is bad game, stop playing it. It's bullfighting, whatever, right? You ban it. You stop it. You don't allow it. You don't sit there and pretend, well, if they have better stadiums, that's all. We'll put AstroTurf down. You know, bullfighting on AstroTurf.
So antinatalism includes some explicit statement regarding sentience. Should a proper definition of antinatalism include an acknowledgement of both conditional antinatalism and unconditional antinatalism? Should a proper definition...
I'm just saying, see, there's no way you can do this to words. So there's no way one word can say everything. So again, if you're going to use antinatalism to describe completely divergent philosophical positions, you know, the word doesn't have much validity or use. So if you're going to concede that the definition isn't small enough for you to put in a paragraph, then why bother? Find another word. That's what I did.
Includes some mention that antinatalism encompasses a spectrum of ideas. There's also no mention of the fact that in addition to being a philosophical position, antinatalism is also a social movement. Those that could not stomach such a declaration when that...
Social movement by the basis of philosophical declaration. I think these are the same thing. I don't know about social movement as even a concept. I mean, there's either people for it or against it. They either vote yes or they vote no. It's just that's the way that it all falls in the end. So to say that you have to mention that the religious people are fanatic and will try to kill you. Okay, I mean, is that necessary to describe what it is to be a religious person? I mean, that would be just kind of excessive, right? To say that, oh yeah, all the religious people want to kill you because you don't have their religion. Well, that's not really true, so why would I include it in a definition? I suppose you could say, yes, some fanatics, the more aggressive believers, are trying to kill you.
Detail was at one time added to an early version of the current Wikipedia definition. We'll rejoice in its absence here, but I personally think that leaving that out would be a mistake. Any thoughts on all that, Matti?
Not on your additions, they are spot on. Only that I find what the bot says about population stuff a little alarming. Reducing humankind's future size by not making more people, yes. But actual population policies might be another kettle of fish. I think this will be more pronounced in some other answer, so let's move on, shall we?
We shall.
All right. So, I don't know if you heard that. I could, there's a little bit of an accent problem. But I have a tiny sped up, but whatever. So he's a little uncomfortable with this idea of population control. It's not really about the subject, and I think he thinks there's a danger in how populations are controlled. And I would say there's no real evidence, in my opinion, of that danger, in the sense that, yes, it happens to be that people who are more reckless in their reproduction are people of color. It just happens to be that fact because they're from these poorer countries. But I don't think that would change the equation any if they were all... if Muslims were perfectly white, ginger, I don't think it would change the opinion, okay, the perception. So I don't think it's fair to say this is about, there's this great slippery slope of racism. I'm not saying racism isn't a problem in the world, but I don't think this subject... there's any indication that people are motivated by racial considerations. I don't see the evidence of it anyway. All right, take a little break and be back. All right, I should be back. So, leave us continue.
Indeed. Our next question was, are there different kinds of antinatalism? And the answer was,
yes, there are different varieties of antinatalism. Some more extreme forms advocate ending humanity's population through mass sterilization or a global one-child policy.
All right, so again, it doesn't say, it's lost the point, in my opinion, okay, that if you're trying to stop the suffering engine, the big motor is nature. The big motor includes all of the sentient mammals on Earth, at least, and, you can go way back, frankly. Again, feeling, ouch, okay, was experienced a long time ago. We're talking about fish, okay? It's a long time ago. The first organisms that could learn. So it's about reward and punishment. It's about organisms being subjected to reward and punishment. And the only way, that could be manifest is to create some sort of value engine, some sort of nail in the eye, some sort of cupcake. Some kind of positive and negative. And what it turned into wasn't just a carrot and a whip. It's just a whip, and then you take away the whip. All right? Or you threaten with the whip. But there is no carrot. There's just whips, and that's what's controlling people. People are driven by the whips that are actively hitting them and by the threats of poverty and different things out there. Those potential, those whips ready to get them. And that's what's driving people. Fear of loneliness, fear of this, fear of that, blah, blah, blah. and obviously this isn't going to get to any of that. So the varieties of antinatalism, again, I would say the most dramatic variety is one's a philosophy that includes natalism to mean anything being natal that's a sentient being versus human-centric, human-focused bullshit. So that would be the most obvious, huge qualifier between people who you might title eugenicists, you know, people who think in terms of genetic code, and people who think in terms of race.
While other less radical approaches propose discouraging people from having children due to the potential for suffering. In addition, some proponents of antinatalism believe that procreation should only be allowed in cases of extreme caution and deliberation, with couples only bringing a child into the world when they are willing and able to
So this just has to do with people who are pro-civilization, you could say, or pro-civil, what's a good word for, sort of an elitist policy, or even, you know, just a human improvement movement, you could call it, or some other kind of thing, you know, where they're just trying to make a social argument rather than any argument that has anything to do with the nature of life itself. So it's just about creating a better world. It's not about or fixing the world that exists, and it has really nothing to do with acknowledging that there's something wrong with the game itself. So again, this is just game improvement, not game ending kind of distinctions. So they're really big distinctions. Ethelism doesn't come up in here, so that's funny. That's interesting.
Provide them with a healthy, safe, and supportive environment.
And that's what I meant by the iffiness of the population stuff. Mass sterilization and a global one-child policy might reduce the number.
So again, we don't need any of that. So let me just make the point, okay, that you don't need to sterilize people and you don't need to do this other kind of crap, okay? Because frankly, all you have to do is educate people. So if, as long as they have a high school education, frankly, right? But if you just went by that one standard, okay, is that look at world population based on whether they're high school graduates or not high school graduates. And if you put all the people who graduate high school in a pile, they're not breeding enough to maintain population. They will go extinct. So that's how we've already won the argument. So this isn't about anything very dramatic in terms of, oh, we have to create laws. No, you have to just change some beliefs, okay? And then if you were to make laws, what you have to do is make laws that prevent other countries from being completely out of control, in the sense that you have to give them rewards and punishments to educate their populace. And, you know, we're feeding, you know, the UN feeds a lot of people on Earth. And frankly, that food ought to come with a reciprocal gift, which is you have to be a little more civilized. It's not asking too much, but I don't know whether, you know, the fact is that you don't need to be draconian, because we've already won the argument, in the sense that people who are reasonably educated already have apprehension and already take having kids at least sufficiently seriously enough not to make as big a mess. And the good news is the mess they make is small enough, okay, that time will take care of it. It'll work. It's good enough, okay? Just reducing procreation is good enough.
Of people, but in the hands of government, they are blunt instruments and may do
more. All right, so I don't see any evidence of these governments doing any of this crap, okay? I see exactly the opposite. I see governments subsidizing procreation. So, again, this is just sort of a bullshit, boogeyman that government is to be feared in terms of being able to make a statement about whether people should act like fucking baboons or not, right? I mean, the whole point of being human and having intelligence is to be the bus driver, okay? To be the smart one, okay? To behave intelligently. And all of those things say, yes, procreation is a serious thing that takes place, that people make a decision for somebody else. This is all really important. And frankly, anybody doing it recklessly and sloppily ought to be sanctioned, if not more aggressively denied the opportunity to make that mess. Again, you don't have to sterilize people. You just have to take kids away. You do a lot of other things to discourage the behavior.
More harm than good. The biggest danger is that dominant ethnic or national groups impose restrictions on others, but not on themselves.
Okay, so this is more, you know, I think this is just such a fake boogeyman that, you know, the case for declining population is going to be tainted by racial motivations. You know, whatever. Everything can be tainted by racial motivations, but it's just useless to point it out as if it's a real, as if it's already happening, when it doesn't even really exist anywhere in the argument, as far as I can see.
This is already the standard policy in the global north, mediated by the United Nations. Our country needs more children, but the sooner the poor of the global south stop breeding, the better.
I don't understand why you can't understand how that's a perfectly rational statement. They're more likely to create children who are going to suffer more and be more reckless in their procreation. So why wouldn't there be a higher sanction against the criminals? Again, there's no point in punishing everybody for a mass murderous act. The whole idea is to create reward and punishment, to create incentives and disincentives, to create deterrence. And you can't do that by punishing people who didn't commit the crime. You have to actually punish the guilty. Whether you like it or not, that's who you have to punish. And the fact is, the poor are guilty of recklessness and creating most of the problem. That's just a fact. They do most of the jaywalking and most of the drinking and most of the smoking and most of all the negative things that take place. They do most of it. So their portion of blame and punishment should be higher, frankly. That's just rational. You want to discourage them. And they need discouraging. The rich, apparently, the well-off, the high school educated, don't need to be discouraged because they're already taking it seriously. A sufficient number of their population take it seriously. An insufficient number of the poor take it seriously.
I would like to call this real-life policy selective pronatalism and cut any ties that it has in people's minds with antinatalism.
Yeah, whatever, you like to do that. but whatever, I just don't see any point in raising this red herring fear monster, that somehow the movement is totally tainted by people with racial motivations or bigotry against poor people. It's not a bigotry against poor people to recognize they do exactly, they're exactly guilty. They're not wearing sneakers by accident. They're wearing them because they are in fact criminals.
The arguments presented in the answer...
They're not being profiled, okay, in some unfair manner. They're being profiled quite legitimately. They have an incredibly high probability of being guilty. And they do, in fact, need to prove their innocence, in a sense, because the very fact is they are completely tainted with quacking like a duck, walking like a duck, having feathers like a duck, all the whole thing.
That's okay. Avoid creating suffering, basically. But even those can be harnessed to support selective pronatalism. As in, look, our children here have a better chance of having a good life.
And that's a good rational thing. It's a rational thing if there has to be, if people have to procreate, it's perfectly rational that they do so in a manner that's more likely to produce a less negative result. So it would be stupid to say it doesn't matter how negative the result is. And on top of that, the fact is they're more likely to be high school educated, all those things, so their kids are less likely to have kids. So again, it's just too stupid to say this doesn't matter. It's an important thing to recognize who the problem is, where the problem is, and to say I'm going to pretend I can't see it. Why would you pretend not to see it? I mean, ignorance and poverty are the number one cause of population increase. fact.
Than your children there. You stop, we continue, and everything will be hunky-dory.
I agree.
Yeah, no, it'd be hunky-dory in the sense that, yes, if tomorrow we just, again, if you could just magically separate the Earth into two worlds and you just said, okay, you know, we're just going to do this, all right, and you take all the high school educated, the countries where most people are high school educated, and you let that planet drift off and then the other planet drift off, you're going to see two entirely different outcomes. One planet is going to do the perfect antinatalist wet dream, and the other planet is going to be a complete disaster. Fact.
With you about the one-child policy, about the ethnic majorities, and about the dangers of leaving those matters in the hands of governments, even though I'm also unsure if antinatalism could ultimately be achieved without their money and power. It's a question I've wrestled with. As much as I like to make an effort to include...
Like I say, everybody can draw anything into draconian horror, or they can just say, oh yeah, well, we passed a law that says you can't make a left turn, you know. I mean, it doesn't take much law, all right, to create the outcome. Now, if we quit subsidizing having kids, that is, if you quit taxing people out of their houses, you know, 85% of property taxes, which are gigantic, right? It's my number one expense. It's 90% of my income. Is to subsidize other people's reproductive choice. So if you quit subsidizing having kids, then a lot more people are going to pragmatically say, I'm not going to have them because I don't want to pay for their health care, and I don't want to pay for their education. I don't want to pay for a police force to monitor them. I don't want to pay for all this safety shit. Okay, and all these counselors and all this other bullshit that you got to pay for because somebody decides to have kids. So little things you could do, okay, in terms of little changes in the law, take away the subsidies and you've done a whole bunch to, I think, all right, say you've already won over 50% of the population won't have kids. 50% of the kids won't have kids born today in America. So you're already, you know, big, huge win there. And the rest of them, again, they're not making pragmatic decisions. They're not having to live with the consequences of their decisions. So if they actually had to, you know, if they had to pay for it, okay, they had to pay for their pets, the real cost, then they wouldn't have them. And that's, you know, that's the true outcome. And then, again, the other population you have to do something about are the ones that just don't give a fuck. They have no brains, they're morons, and they just recklessly have sex and then have babies without even thinking about any responsibility they have for the outcome. So I'm just saying that those people have to be monitored. You have to do something. Like I said, I don't think you have to sterilize them, but you do have to create some sort of impact. You know, take a little of their candy away or something. You know, reward the ones who don't have kids, okay? Reward the... Reward the crack whores who don't have kids by giving them extra money.
Food forms of conditional antinatalism within my antinatal sphere, because I like to meet people halfway when I can. You make an excellent case here in pointing out conditional antinatalism's inherent relation to selective pronatalism, as you call it. That is precisely what it ends up being. Yes.
I mean, selective pronatalism. I mean, it's just, you know, it's these qualifications. You wouldn't do this to the Right to Life movement. You wouldn't do this to any other kind of... You know, I mean, it's pretty obvious that people either, you know, there's some people want to protect the fetus because the fetus is a field, in their opinion, the fetus is some extraordinarily feeling organism, and it's just terrible if it gets aborted. You know, so it doesn't have any religious connotation. It just has to do with the ugliness of the act. And then the other nuts who think it has a soul and somehow God put it there and you're not allowed to, you know, change God's decision, and yes, miscarriage, God can kill them, but you can't, blah, 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 blah. Some kind of bullshit. But it's be that simple. I mean, it's not going to be this complicated.
What I'm not so sure about is if things like mass sterilization, even though that would never be my personal chosen method of practiced antinatalism, can indeed be cut from either the minds of non-antinatalists or some antinatalists alike. I think that's just wishful thinking.
I think it's fair to buy it, okay? So if you're going to mass sterilize because you're going to reward people for getting sterilized, you're going to pay them for a feature they have that they can choose to monetize if they wish. Okay, but yes, sterilizing, you know, forced sterilization is a little bit ugly. But again, smallpox Mary existed, okay? Yeah, there's a real threat that some people possess, and the burden is real. I mean, and the expense is real. And society has a real right to protect itself from people who are going to ruin its safety net and ruin the capacity of the society to do things, because these assholes ruin it for everybody. It's the cheaters. Cheaters suck. Okay, I mean, people can't obey the simple little rules about, you know, you can just think of it in terms of just how impractical it is. If, you know, people drive down the street and crap flies off their truck or something, smashes into somebody else's windshield and kills them. I mean, these kind of assholes just make it hard for everybody else to live a decent life because of these threats created by their recklessness.
Too many antinatalists would indeed jump on this idea were it to be possible. In fact, in the face of supposedly scarier things like benevolent red buttons or, you know, having to actually talk to people, many ANs would greatly prefer the idea of mass sterilization, as they would find it to be kinder.
Okay, well, the red button thing is outside the scope, in a sense, because, again, that's just an argument about the fact that, you know, our commitment to being a law-abiding citizen. There's at some point you accept that under this circumstance I could be a vigilante. Okay, I mean, under the circumstance where, say, somebody rapes my daughter or something, and I know it's him. I mean, she tells me, I got a videotape of it. It's him. It's blah 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 blah. And the system somehow doesn't do anything. Well, then I'm going outside the system. Okay, because it's just not gonna stand. Okay, so. You know, that kind of statement where, yes, there's a point where you go outside of the insufficiency of our civilizing rules. But those are extreme cases. And, you know, we're all individuals and we have to do what we think is best. And there's just no reason for a person who believes it sincerely and has done good logic to say, I'm not going to do the right thing because there's a law against doing the right thing. That's, you know, that gets kind of silly.
Not a fan of mass sterilization, let me clarify, and I do not advocate for it. Also, some proposals...
Well, I do advocate for it in the sense that we ought to offer a nice big bribe. It's that simple. Let's quit subsidizing procreation and let's reward people who choose to make it less probable that they'll procreate. So, yes, I'm all for it. Free condoms and, you know, maybe we should pay people to wear them. You know, whatever.
Opponents of antinatalism believe that procreation should only be allowed in cases of extreme caution and deliberation, with couples only bringing a child into the world when they are willing and able to provide them with a healthy, safe, and supportive...
Yeah, so all that crap doesn't really have anything to do with the subject as far as I'm concerned. There's no point in being an anti-something. You just call it something like conditional natalism or whatever, but it really wouldn't be an anti-concept if it's got a whole list of qualifications that make it okay. You can't really be anti if you change one little circumstance. Like I'm pro-life and anti-abortion, except if, you know, the abortion is performed with stainless steel instruments, then it's okay. You know, if you have just one little tiny qualification, yeah, forget it. You're really not, you know, you're really not one of them.
Environment, that is false. There are exceedingly rare cases where an antinatalist might condone some birth, most of them being not at all real scenarios, and never for the reasons stated above. Any thoughts?
Whatever that even, you know, that's such hair-splitting in terms of, you have to support the birth that leads to the last generation that has to do the work of, you know, cleaning up the mess. So, I mean, that those people will have to exist. So that's perfectly reasonable. We'll pause. All right, well, I'm getting on an hour. So, I'll play the rest of this and listen to it and maybe do a review of any important clarifications or distinctions or separations. So anyway, this was broadcast on the Antinatalism International. No, it's the Exploring Antinatalism podcast. Okay. I think. Yeah, I think it is. Let's see what channel it is. Yes. All right. So, anyway. What was I going to say? Obviously, I'm an advocate for recognizing that you could just metaphor the existence of life on Earth as a game, the game of life. It's controlled by evolution, which is crap, and it's a poor construct in the sense that you're just, whipping things into conformance to behavior, and that's all there is the whip, the pain. And the illusion that you're going to gain immunity or relief from the pain. And that's all bad, okay? It's bad psychology, it's bad structure, and that the game should be gracefully put out of commission and as graceful as possible. That's the ideal. So whatever gets to the end and gets there as efficiently as possible in terms of causing the least amount of harm, the least amount of anguish, worry, fear, pain, suffering, torture. Yes, that's what you choose. And it's that simple. Frankly, in my opinion, it's not that complicated. But anyway, so, we'll call that a video. And such. So, till the next time. This has been a DoNotGod.com video presentation, and yes, of course, Google is also, like life, Google's evil. Yeah, it's an evil construct. Marketing company controlling access to information. Not a good idea. All right, till the next time. So.